Affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. We will be talking with attorney and University of Kansas Professor Carl Brooks about how political polarization in the U.S. is damaging our courts and what you might want to do about it, dear listener. I'm Spencer Graves. Attorney Craig LeBeau is with me, and we will be interviewing Carl together. So first, Carl, what's the most important thing you'd like to communicate to our listeners?
Sure, Spencer. Good to be with you this evening. Most important thing people ought to take away is that the independence of the courts, an independent judiciary, is a very precious thing in a democracy like ours. That judicial independence is under serious pressure and serious threat right now for reasons we'll talk about a little bit later this evening. But independent courts matter. If you don't have independent courts, then you just have basically political power masquerading as the law.
So say more about that.
Sure. Basic principle of courts is they're not supposed to be like politicians. Politicians go out and promise things to people. They read public opinion polls. They're always looking to do what's popular for the most part. That's why we have them. Judges are different. Courts are different. They don't take a public opinion poll to decide a case. They don't go out and try to decide, what do I need to do to be popular here in this community? Instead, they find the facts with a jury. They apply the law as it's written. They apply past precedent. And they're supposed to be independent. That's how they guarantee our liberties. That's how they guarantee our rights as citizens. When they're acting more like politicians and less like judges, it's bad for everybody.
So talk about the history of rule of law in the Anglo-American tradition.
Sure. It's a phrase that we read a lot about these days, the rule of law. Real simple way to define it is the principle that what judges do is look to the law and apply the law to cases in front of them. They don't check in with politicians to run their opinions and their decisions by the politicians, which means a judge can find a powerful politician, a powerful business corporation, a powerful government in violation of your rights. If you have judges who are always checking with politicians or checking with power in society, you will not get the rule of law. Instead, you get the rule of the powerful.
Right. We allegedly believe in equal rights under the law.
Sure. It's one of the oldest principles that the Americans who came over here as English people almost 400 years ago took from England, the idea that there is a law that's different from political power, and that law needs to have the ability to stand up to political power.
So give me some examples of encroachments on that.
Well, some of the ones that are going on right now involve something as fundamental as how we get judges in the first place. So I've been a lawyer now for 40-some years. Back in the day, as we like to say, judges were chosen on the basis of how good they were as lawyers. You ask, was this a really effective lawyer? Did this lawyer understand the law? Did this lawyer act fairly, honestly, tell the truth, keep their word, keep their temper, which you can sometimes lose in a trial? Today, though, judges more and more are being selected on what I'd call political or party line litmus tests. The politicians who make these selections are asking, will this judge decide a case the way I need the case decided? Will this judge vote with my party? Will this judge follow the lead of public opinion polls that put me into office? That's totally different in the way that judges used to be selected. And it causes problems when those judges make their decisions.
So give me some specifics.
Sure. Take a look at some of the cases that have come up in the last 2 or 3 years through the federal court system dealing with abortion and choice, especially the decisions out of what's called the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in the United States, which includes the state of Texas. The decisions coming from those courts about access to abortion drugs are decided by judges who got selected because they proved that they were anti-abortion. They passed that litmus test necessary to become a judge under Donald Trump. And the decisions that they are making are wrong on the law, they're wrong on the facts, but they carry out the mission of the anti-abortion community. That's a classic example. And there are other ones in the environmental law field. Some of the decisions about how the environmental laws will be applied, especially the Clean Water Act, are being decided in ways where you could have predicted from that judge's political background how he or she would rule.
Yeah, and we're we're seeing that in, I think, in cases involving former President Trump.
There are concerns, Spencer, that, for example, the case where the former president is accused of violating our laws about national security documents, confidential, top secret documents, the case is in front of a judge who is, frankly, very sympathetic to the former president. A lot of lawyers, trial lawyers around the country, including in Florida, think this judge is sort of shading the management of the case to benefit the president who put her into office. And the biggest example, the case involving the former president that's in the District of Columbia, where he's accused of attacking the very liberties of the United States and threatening our constitutional order. The United States Supreme Court seems to be cutting him a break all along the line.
Organizing a riot that tried to take over the U.S. Congress on January 6, 2021. Am I right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Of which I think something like 65 people from Missouri and 25 people from Kansas have either pleaded guilty or been convicted of crimes essentially against the United States or against law enforcement officers. The former president's claim of immunity from any criminal liability, it's berserk. It's ridiculous. There's no substantial basis in American law for that claim. And yet, the Supreme Court has now given the former president probably 2 to 3 extra months before that trial may ever start.
So you mentioned in our preparation for this the Federalist Society. Talk about that.
I mentioned earlier, Spencer, that in the last 10 to 12 years, especially when the party that controlled the Congress and the presidency when Donald Trump was president had the power, they pretty much farmed out the recruitment and selection of federal judges to a society called the Federalist Society. Started over 40 years ago at my former law school at Harvard. It is now basically a political influence machine for ultra-conservative politicians and lawyers to get their favorite people onto federal courts around the country. And increasingly, it's affecting state court selections, too.
Right. So I've, in my personal opinion, people talk about we having a conservative Supreme Court. I don't think so. I think it's a corporatist Supreme Court. Do you have a comment on that?
Or some might say it's a radical Supreme Court. One of the definitions of the law is supposed to be fair. It's also supposed to be predictable and settled. I mean, people organize their relations, their family life, their property life, their business life around decisions of courts. When courts change decisions for no good reason, it undermines the principle of the rule of law. Then it starts looking like they put their finger in their mouth and stuck it up in the air to ask, I wonder what the politicians will think of this decision. Some of the decisions the last 3 or 4 years coming especially from the federal courts and especially from the United States Supreme Court, Spencer, you could pretty much dial in the politics and predict those decisions.
So give me some more examples.
Oh, let's see. Well, some of the decisions that came out flowing from the fame of the infamous Dobbs decision 2 years ago, where the Supreme Court suddenly turned around after almost 50 years and said that the Constitution does not grant American women and their families the freedom to make decisions as intimate as whether they'll have children. That could have been predicted as soon as Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell and the majority party, the Republicans, chose 3 Supreme Court justices. They wired that decision.
Okay. So there's the Citizens United decision from 2010, I guess, that corporations are people and money is speech and humans are second-class citizens of the United States of America. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Much ill flows from that decision. I suspect over the next several years, the current United States Supreme Court will develop that principle that business corporations are entitled to the same freedom of speech, the same protections from the law as individuals are, and will blast a hole through a lot of the different laws and rules that we've relied on to keep ourselves safe and healthy for the last 65 or 70 years.
They're already doing that. They've already done that, haven't they, with environmental protection in several cases?
Yes. My former agency, the Environmental Protection Agency, has suffered a couple of really serious losses in front of the U.S. Supreme Court over the last 2 years. For example, the Clean Air Act makes it very plain that the Environmental Protection Agency is supposed to restrict the emission of pollutants that damage the environment, including heat the environment. Supreme Court 2 years ago said, actually, no, the United States is not supposed to do that. The EPA does not have the authority to do that. We'll toss it back to the Congress. Well, if you were a coal company, an oil company, a chemical company, you probably jumped up and down and said, those campaign contributions that went to those politicians who asked the Federalist Society who to put on the United States Supreme Court, those were brilliant investments because we got the court we needed to get the decision we wanted.
But it's not just the campaign contributions nor the lobbying. It's the fact that those major corporations control most of the money for the major media in the United States.
I don't disagree with that. In some ways, having been a former politician, the campaign contributions grab me a little bit more because you can trace directly influence going along with the money to politicians, to the kinds of judges they put onto courts. But I get your point about media control,
but that's,
too.
It's a more subtle thing because it runs in the depth of human psychology. Everybody thinks they know more than they do. All right, that was something that Daniel Kahneman won the 2002 Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics for leading in the development of that branch of research that established that. So everybody thinks they know more than they do. The major media and everyone thinks everyone prefers information and sources consistent with preconceptions, and so that leads to the political polarization that we've seen worldwide even. I'm sorry, I'm getting off topic, but that's...
Well, I don't disagree with you that political polarization reflects a pretty unhealthy media environment in the United States. I'm concerned, too, about the way that this really intense, almost tribal attitude toward politics is shaping the way politicians think about courts. More and more, they're looking at courts as what you might call the junior varsity political team, unlike the congressional team or the legislative team. They're looking at the courts to do the same things inside courthouses that they do in state houses and in the Congress. And that's really worrisome to me. It should be worrisome to all Americans.
So talk about, I'm thinking of when you talk about independence of the judiciary and lack of it, I'm thinking in terms of Israel and Turkey in recent years, and other countries. You want to comment on that, Carl?
Sure enough, going on in Israel literally up until the tragic invasion of Israel on October 7, Israel was having a huge debate about just how much political pressure powerful politicians could put on the courts in Israel. Same thing in Turkey as well. To the credit of our president, he said to the prime minister of Israel, you're pushing in a direction that will undermine Israeli democracy and undermine your commitment to human rights and the rule of law. Millions of Israelis thought so too. I mean, there were protests of 500,000 people standing up for the rule of law. As yet, we haven't seen that in the United States. But the rule of law here is under pressure, and it's at risk. It also is at risk at the state level too, Spencer. I'll tell you why if you
please.
Ask me a question
no,
about
no,
that.
No, no, no.
Sure. State judges often are a little bit more sensitive to politics than federal judges because a lot of state judges have to run for election. Missouri has a wonderful system where most judges – who have to run for election don't have to put their party label down. They run as nonpartisan elections. You only vote to keep them or not keep them. That's coming under pressure in not just Missouri and Kansas, but other states as well, where party politics are starting to affect the way that judges get elected and the way that judges are nominated. They basically almost now campaign on a platform like a candidate for the legislature or for the Congress. Very worrisome. The late Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, tough Westerner, ranch girl from Arizona, she spent the last 3 or 4 years of her career after leaving the court fighting against this idea of judges asking for money and campaigning for votes just like candidates for the legislature or the Congress. She thought that was insidious and dangerous, and I agreed with her.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So in Israel, I studied that a bit. The number one leading newspaper in Israel is funded by the estate of Sheldon Adelson. It's free, and it's famously known as a Bibiton. It's a shill for Benjamin Netanyahu, and part of the corruption charges against him are returning favors to Sheldon Adelson and his businesses.
Well, you know, Spencer, if you look at Hungary, Donald Trump recently entertained the Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban. Orban in Hungary over the last 10 years has done what I suspect Netanyahu in Israel would love to do if he had the power. He's turned the judges of Hungary into rubber stamps for his political movement. He's done that by undercutting their independence, by forcing them to go through political litmus tests. He's basically turned them into an arm of his political movement. If that should ever happen in the United States, we'd be in deep, deep trouble.
Yep. We are visiting with attorney and University of Kansas Professor Carl Brooks about the politicization of the judiciary in the U.S. So give me some more examples, Carl.
Oh, sure. Well, in some of the federal cases that are coming toward the Supreme Court right now are arguments against environmental protection, equal rights protection, labor protection, economic guarantees and protections that ordinary people enjoy. The criticism that's being brought by conservative businesses and their organizations are, well, these administrative agencies don't have legitimate authority to make the rules that keep us safe, keep our vehicles safe, keep our health safe. And the Supreme Court of the United States appears very sympathetic to those arguments. A justice who was one of Donald Trump's main appointees, Neil Gorsuch, has decided and announced pretty clearly he intends to dismantle what he calls the administrative state. Those aren't just words. Those are real protections that we've had in the law for 75 years. They protect ordinary people against all kinds of things that threaten our health and safety. If this Supreme Court goes the way I think they look like they were going to go in their arguments 3 or 4 weeks ago about these two cases, it will be much harder for Department of Labor, Environmental Protection Agency, Federal Highway Administration, all the different agencies that use their law to keep us safe, healthy, and prosperous to do their work. The courts will have thrown a wrench right into that machinery.
There's cases in Michigan where the water in a certain community was contaminated by order from the governor of the state that still has no redress. That was 10 or 20 years ago, right?
Yes, in Flint, Michigan.
Thank you.
Right, and it looked there like there was political influence being pushed out from a governor's office, somewhat through the courts, definitely onto the local government in Flint, Michigan. Anytime politicians, it's just the way they are, and the way I used to be. When you have the power, you want to do things for the people who put you in there or the interests that put you in there. If you can do that by wiring courts to give decisions that support you and your party and the interests of your party, you'll try it. And it's hard for courts to stand up. You know, the guys who wrote the Constitution back 230 years ago, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and others, called courts the weakest branch. What they meant was they can't tax, they don't have an army, they don't have a police force. They depend on popular respect. They depend on the belief people have that courts are going to be fair and do what's right. If we lose that sense of fairness, the courts really are the weakest branch.
Abraham Lincoln, the Supreme Court ruled against Lincoln on something, I've forgotten what. Maybe you can tell me. And Lincoln said, let them enforce it.
Oh, you're thinking of a predecessor, Andrew Jackson. Yeah, Jackson, when he decided to boot the Indians out of the Southeast. A case went up from some Indian people in Georgia. Supreme Court said the president has violated treaties and federal laws. We say it's wrong. And Jackson said, John Marshall and the Supreme Court made their decision. Now let them come enforce it. And they can't because they don't have an army. They can't tax. It depends upon popular respect. When people don't respect courts, their decisions aren't going to have the weight we need them to have, and they can be pushed around by politicians.
Yeah. So give us a brief summary of major cases involving former President Trump.
Well, sure. There's one big one going on at a state court level in Georgia where the former president, along with a bunch of his henchmen, are accused of what's called RICO violations, essentially racketeering under Georgia law for trying to steal the Georgia election. Then there are some big cases at the federal level. The president is being accused essentially of sedition and violating our laws by trying to overturn the election. That's in Washington, D.C. There's a case in Florida where he's accused criminally of essentially stealing and absconding with the nation's most secret documents. And then there's a New York State case that's due to start up here in about a week and a half where he's accused of paying hush money to a former porn actress with whom he had an affair to try to keep it out of the election of 2016. Not to mention the two cases that he lost in New York, one where he defamed the advice columnist E. Jean Carroll. He lost that one in federal court in New York. And the one where he and his family of enablers violated all the New York laws about managing their corporation and were found to have basically cooked the books when they were looking to borrow money.
Yeah, so they had one set of books that they showed to the tax authorities, and a different set of books that they showed to the banks, right?
Yes. I mean, I've been a lawyer. I know that when a trial level court makes a decision, that's an important decision. The loser can always seek an appeal. It looks, though, to me and to many legal experts who looked at those New York cases, the facts were solid. The legal reasoning was tight. It's unlikely that the former president's appeals will be successful. It's one reason he had to post the gigantic bonds that he's had to post in order to take an appeal.
Right. So to go back to the Federal Society, and you mentioned something about Mitch McConnell and his relationship with the Federal Society.
Yeah, sure. Well, Senator McConnell announced 2 weeks ago that he'd no longer be the Republican leader in the Senate. When reporters asked him, what are you the most proud of during your almost 20 years running the Republican Party in the Senate, he said the courts and the judges. What he meant by that, plain and simple, was he used raw political power time and again to put certain types of judges into the federal courts. The Senate has to approve federal court nominations. They come from the president. Mitch McConnell essentially said to this organization of extremely conservative lawyers and activists from big businesses, you tell me who you want in the federal courts, I'll use our majority in the Senate to get those guys and those women onto the federal courts. Hundreds of different federal judges over the last 15 years owe their position to the Federalist Society and to Mitch McConnell. They should be thankful to him because it's a lifetime job. It's pretty difficult to lose that lifetime job. Those folks will be with us in some cases for the next 25 years.
So give me an example of a federal judge who lost his job.
Oh, let's see. It's pretty rare. You have to think back. I know there was a judge in Florida who took some bribes. It's so unusual for federal judges.
You have to be pretty blatant.
Yes, it's an impeachable offense. One thing the founders of the Constitution did to preserve judicial independence was to make it almost impossible to remove them unless they had behaved really badly, which usually means committing a crime, like taking a bribe to decide a case, or committing a crime on their own.
Yeah. There's been allegations of that for Clarence Thomas, but I guess so far he's they don't have the solid evidence on it.
Right. That's a whole other issue is why the Supreme Court of the United States gets to play by different rules than every other federal court and than every other state court in the United States.
Right.
I've got a couple questions. So in reference to this last comment about Clarence Thomas, although there's no evidence that he's proof that he's taken bribes, although it's kind of obvious, there is the fact that he has been on cases that he refused to recuse himself on and had a clear conflict of interest. Now, if a lawyer was involved, like you or I, involved in the case with that kind of conflict of interest, we would have been disbarred or brought up for potential disbarment. How do we get rid of somebody on the Supreme Court that has even a more extreme conflict of interest?
Craig, the situation you point out is a scandal indeed. Justice Thomas not only doesn't recuse from cases where he has a family or a political interest, he essentially takes money from the Federalist Society to travel around the country and around the world enjoying their generosity. He's essentially basically on their payroll. I'm not wired enough into D.C. to understand what it would take to get Clarence Thomas to step off the Supreme Court. I think that would probably take way more political muscle and juice than I understand.
So, the other question I've got, well, two others. We talked about the Georgia case with Trump, and the prosecutor there, they made a big deal out of it because she had a romantic relationship with one of the other prosecutors that she hired. Does Trump's attorneys have any basis to claim conflict of interest? I don't see it myself.
Yeah, no, Craig, I'm not familiar enough with the particular rules in Georgia to know what kind of standard that judge will have to decide in order to disqualify District Attorney Willis. It looks to me like, you know, she probably could have used slightly better judgment, but it doesn't appear to have anything to do with the strength of the case or the way that the district attorney's office has been proceeding with that prosecution of that case. It's unfortunate. I'm sure it's embarrassing for her and the other people involved, but it doesn't seem to go to the legal merits of what she's doing at all.
And the other thing, more of a comment, when we were characterizing what the court was and Spencer said it's not really a conservative court anymore. I forget how you labeled it. But it seems like it's really an activist court, and it's by far the most activist court, way more than any time that it was supposedly a liberal court. And liberals were never that activist.
My late grandmother would have said, Craig, it's really rich for conservatives to complain about activism because the current Supreme Court, as you say, has been tearing up precedents left, right, and center. We're in a much different place with this Supreme Court than even 3 or 4 years ago, and they've been pretty open about it. Their decision is, we will come to a decision that suits the political purposes of the powers that put us into these seats.
And we are out of time. We have been talking with attorney and University of Kansas Professor Carl Brooks. Tune in next week to hear attorney Spencer Webster discuss a case he filed March 11, just yesterday, in the Western Federal District of Missouri, claiming that the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department does not provide equal protection under the law. The suit is filed against Missouri politicians Governor Parsons, Attorney General Bailey, Secretary of State Ashcraft, and the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. This lack of equal protection stems from a lack of local control, which dates from an 1861 attempt by the Missouri legislature to aid the Confederacy in the opening of the Civil War. This suit claims that this lack of local control violates the 1868 14th Amendment, One of the plaintiffs is the mother of Ryan Stokes, who was allegedly unarmed and surrendering when he was shot and killed a decade ago by a Kansas City, Missouri police officer. I'm Spencer Graves. Craig Glebeau is at the controls. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you, Spencer and Carl. Coming up next is Counterspin, followed by All Souls Forum at 8 o'clock.